The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Everybody, Bill Buckmaster along with Ray Allen. We're plugging away on a shortened work week. Ray's engineering and producing the show as usual. Good to see him on the other side of the glass. And together, we have a big welcome for all of our listeners of the Buckmaster Show. It is Thursday, the sixth day of September 2018. Hope the day is going well for you. We're on AM 1030 KVOI, known as The Voice. We have our worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com and, of course, kvoi.com. All of the podcasts, all the shows we've done pretty much with a few exceptions since January of 2011 on my website, buckmastershow.com. Anytime during the hour, call us at 790-2040. Let's begin now with Tucson City Councilman, Democrat representing the 6th Ward in the city of Tucson, Mr. Steve Kasachek. Councilman Kasachek, how are you?
Doing okay. How are you doing?
Doing well. Had a nice taste of fall up in Alaska where the leaves are already turning. And I kind of felt a little bit of fall in the air this morning. I don't know if you also felt that on your morning run. It did seem like it's kind of the change of seasons.
A little bit, but my wife reminded me later on in the morning that it's going to be 100 degrees in a couple of days. So the bloom fell off that rose pretty quickly.
So. Got it. Got a couple items I'd like to delve into here. This just came across my desk that the city of Tucson has been awarded a grant to revitalize the Oracle neighborhood. And Councilman, when I first came out here as a 17-year-old freshman from Chicago to the University of Arizona in 1965, I stayed at what is now the high-rise known as the Tucson House. At the time, it was a Hilton Hotel.
It's not a Hilton Hotel anymore, and it doesn't even remotely resemble a Hilton Hotel. The Choice Neighborhoods grants that we were awarded here in the last couple days, $1.3 million. The Oracle Area Revitalization Project has been something that we've been working on for literally years. It dates back to the early tenure of when Karen Ulick was in the seat in Ward 3. And Paul Durham has picked up the mantle and has continued to advocate for that area. It is an important opportunity for us to not only put some federal dollars into that facility, Tucson House, but also to put dollars into the Oracle area in terms of the revitalization of that area. So we've done a ton of work in the downtown core. This is just right on the fringe of it, and so what we're seeing now is the successes that we're having in the middle of the downtown core sort of slop out onto the edges at this point. So we're seeing, you know, the Caterpillar plant and a potential Monier project over on the west side. This work here now on the north side of the downtown core, and so the successes that we're seeing downtown are starting to see their effects on the periphery, and that's a good thing because it's the old rising tide, you know, lifts all boats sort of deal, and so it's great. And the Tucson House really needs the facelift. It's a physically challenged facility. We have a lot of vulnerable population. Population living there, and it's great that we get these dollars. That, by the way, was one of two very significant grants that we were awarded in the last couple of days. The Tucson Police Department also announced a $750,000 grant that they received that will go largely to domestic violence victims and principally to Spanish-speaking domestic violence victims. So we have $2 million in grant money in the last couple of days that are going to be earmarked for some very vulnerable populations in this community, and it's money that will be well used and very much needed.
All right, both those grants, very good news. Carl has called us, Councilman, at 790-2040. Carl, what's on your mind today?
Why do we still have that statue of Pancho Villa? If it had been a Confederate icon of some sort, that thing would have been torn down and destroyed months and months and months ago. And as it is, you could melt the thing down and actually get some money out of it to help the Tucson coffers.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why we have the statue of Pancho Villa. Probably because it's been there for years and nobody's really raised a ruckus about it. So, Carl, if you want to take that up with somebody who represents that ward, I'd be happy to give you that phone number offline.
All right. How about an update? Oh, well, no, we've got another call. Let's go to Matthew. Matthew, go ahead. You're with Councilman Kasachek.
Yeah. Hey, Steve, I have been approached several times by people in the community who've asked me, is there something I can do about, there's a property on the Speedway Oracle area, just before the freeway, that used to be apparently where all the jazz and musicians or something, and it had been used in a few movies as a backdrop or something like that. I know you know about it because I think I talked to you about it once. I can't think of the name right off the top of my head. Is there any way that you guys could, that any of that money for the grant could also be looked at, a way to securing it from the owner? I know the owner has said if somebody wants to buy it from him, he'd want to keep it a historic property, but it's not technically designated a historic property yet. And I think you know what I'm talking about. But anyway, I'll leave it there. Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Well, so there's a couple of questions wrapped into one. The value of the historic property, what can be done in terms of convincing a private property owner to sell it. There's the movie industry that you kind of touched on in the middle of that question, and the use of the Choice Neighborhoods money. The bulk of the Choice Neighborhoods dollars are going to go into the Tucson House. That facility and $1.3 million is not going to cover all the needs that we have in the Tucson House. And we have a responsibility because it is one of our public housing inventory to make sure that we bring that up to standards for the residents who live there. The questions about and I'm going to kind of read into the question, Matthew, because you touched on the movie industry and how that facility used to be used there. I know that Matthew also is working with the state film office. We held a forum at the loft a few months ago that was very well represented by not only the state but our local people, Shelley Hall from Visit Tucson, and a lot of the indies, people who do want to bring the film industry back to Tucson, whether it's in that facility or out at Old Tucson or you know wherever in the surrounding area. In the last week, I've been in contact with a guy named Mark Headley, who works with another guy named Jim Ferguson, and on and on and on. It's sort of that 7 points of separation where at the end of it, we all find out that, gee, we've worked together or we know people who have worked together in this industry, in the film industry, for the last several decades. Bill, I know you and I have had this conversation in the past about the value of getting films back in the state of Arizona, and most specifically into southern Arizona and Tucson. It's a fluid conversation. It's active. I'm hoping that with Governor Ducey having initiated the installation of a new statewide film office, that this term he will do more than simply hang a shingle over the door, but actually invest some dollars into that. I would love to see the state legislature put a film incentive package together so that we can be something other than flyover country to New Mexico, and that we start landing some of those films here. That would be a jobs bill at the state legislature for all the right reasons, clean industry and getting us back on that map. So kind of a rabbit trail off of Matthew's original question. I don't know how we coax the guy to sell it. We're not going to be able to use the Choice Neighborhoods dollars for it. But if there is any way to get private industry involved, and that was the purpose of the Loft Forum, was to get private industry to invest in incentives to get the film industry up off his feet. If this guy wants to do that, I'm sure that we got plenty of takers who would help him to renovate that and do tenant improvements to turn that thing into a soundstage.
And where is that exactly, Steve?
It's up by the freeway off of Speedway.
Oh, okay. All right, let's take our break right here. Councilman, stick with us. I want to tell our listeners about my favorite bakery in town. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. My friend Steve is the owner up there at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. What a great job they do with all of their baked goods. They get up very early, as you can imagine, so the goods are available for you when they open bright and early, and of course right now for lunch. How about a sandwich on some of that great bread from Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner Swan and Sunrise? Their website is conveniently located. In fact, all of our partners have their website links at buckmastershow.com. We'll be right back.
Neighborhood stalwarts. Virginia and Frank Buttley are overjoyed when Tanya and Pablo Del Valle move into the fixer-upper next door. But opposing views about culture, politics, and landscaping push these well-meaning couples into a border battle. Don't miss Native Gardens, a laugh-out-loud, big-hearted comedy with a lot of sharp little teeth. September 8th through the 29th at the Temple of Music and Art. Tickets available at arizonatheater.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Friday, we talk with Pima County Administrator Chuck Huckleberry. Joining me in the conversation, Sarah Garrett Gasson, Editorial Director of the Arizona Daily Star, and Jim Ninsel, Editor of the Tucson Weekly. Matt Russell of Inside Tucson Business has Weekend Watch on Buckmaster on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Green Things is our favorite nursery in town. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. You know, this is becoming a destination in itself on their 13 acres. Jan and Jack have really expanded over there, and now in the portfolio is Zocalo, which for years was over by Country Club and Broadway. Well, Zocalo now is part of the Green Things family. And all that great merchandise from Mexico and Latin America is at Green Things. Check out Their website might be a great starting place for you, greenthingsaz.com. Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasacek with us on the live line, and we were just talking about the film industry, and we have just learned that Burt Reynolds has died at the age of 82. That news just coming in, and I'm sure, I don't know this what movies particularly were made here in Tucson that he was in, but it's probably a safe bet that there were a couple.
Oh, I'm sure. Back in the day, there's no question at all. So can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Is it appropriate or okay to ask about a pending FCC approval of a sale of a particular station, or is that off?
No. Ray is telling me, shaking his head, no.
Then I won't. So,
I can't say this, that Buckmaster will continue in our time period, there will be no changes as far as this show is concerned and all of our great sponsors.
All right. So Ray's an old wet blanket, but we'll talk about that another time.
We will talk about it another time. All but it's for me anyway, I'm excited, and it's good news that's going to be coming down the pike for KVOI.
And Green Things is absolutely a great place. People need to go by there. They've got a little petting zoo, and it's right on the loop. If you're on your bike, you can do it that way, or it's off a river road if you're on the other side of them. So, yeah, it's a cool place.
Yeah, I'm so pleased and proud of all of our sponsors. What I was going to ask you, and you're so fit and trim, I don't know if you've been up to Steve's and the Danish home of the Danish Kringle, Mona's. Do you like bakery goods?
Yeah, I would probably eat them out of their profits if I worked there. So when you said it was owned by Steve, it's a different Steve, or I would be like a sumo wrestler.
Okay, how about an update on, we're speaking about kind of landmarks, and I guess you could call the Tucson House something that's been here a long time, a landmark, and the Benedictine Monastery has been here since the 1940s.
Yep.
Has Mr. The developer Ross Rolney made any more decisions concerning the property?
We're actually making some really good progress on the development. The relationship began a little rocky. It is now to the point where we have a very good working relationship. Ross, to his credit, has met multiple times publicly with residents from both the immediate neighborhood and Sam Hughes Across Country Club. They have held two very large public meetings in the chapel itself, where over 100 people attended. He and I, in cooperation with a lot of the residents, have worked out an arrangement whereby he has agreed to a height not to exceed 55 feet. He began at 86 feet, which was seven stories. He has also agreed to preservation of the monastery and to public uses, and to engage a conversation about how the monastery can be used once the exterior development goes on. We also met on site with representatives of the Mission Gardens, and the purpose of that, and Ross was there, was to talk about the transplanting and preservation of some of the orchards that people have been passionate about. They've got everything from pomegranates to oranges to avocados to peaches, everything that you could possibly want to find there. A lot of them have been there for decades and decades. And so we met over there with some experts in the field who are talking to Ross about grafting and rerooting them and transplanting what can be transplanted, both out to the Mission Gardens and to the Botanical Gardens, Tucson Botanical Gardens. So a lot of progress. I'm convinced that he, at this point, has put the conversation about a student housing project at the very back end of his in-file, and is watching this process kind of play itself out. There will be a public meeting on September 12th at City Hall at 6 o'clock to talk amongst the Planning Commission members about changes to neighborhood plans and area plans. But it's moving in what I would describe as a very positive very positive and congenial way right now.
And I mentioned 1940s. It was actually built in the 1930s, and a very famous architect, mm-hmm. Roy Place. This was one of his pieces, one of his designs. So this is a very prominent historic structure in our community. And wouldn't it be nice, Steve Kasachek, if we could have the monastery continue the structure itself and do some a classical concert series there? I think it'd be terrific.
Yeah, so Place designed it based on some renderings from Josiah Josler. So there are a couple of very prominent names in the design. I know that a couple of the groups that have approached Ross Rolney about use of the monastery are, in fact, choral groups who said that they could program that space 5 nights a week with no problem at all. So that's going to be a very interesting conversation. Ross and I have talked about how to advance this one step at a time. You know, there was the height issue, then there's the use issue, there's the preservation issue, the orchards and all that. But one of the boxes that we haven't checked yet that he is amenable to is that when we get past this planning commission deal and the discussion about amending neighborhood plans, we're going to invite the public in to actually tour the facility. And then meet in the chapel at the end of the tour and just talk about public uses. You know, what kinds of things would the public like to see there? And I'm sure that we're going to get the suggestion that you just made. If anybody who's been in the chapel part of it knows that from an acoustic standpoint, it's an amazing facility. And choral presentations will certainly be a piece of the conversation.
What about the F-35? We had Councilwoman Romero with us a couple of weeks ago. She's concerned about the noise level, and I know they've extended the period for comment. Have you taken a stand at all, Councilman, on that?
I have. We have a study that the city commissioned through a guy named Barry Bleckman a few years ago, and Bleckman's position, former Air Force guy, former DOD guy. He knows his stuff. And his conclusion was that the city of Tucson, Davis-Monthan, and the DM-50 and the people who are talking about this should not put all their eggs in the F-35 basket, but should be talking about multiple different kinds of missions to demonstrate the value of Davis-Monthan going forward, whether or not the F-35 gets here. And that's the A-10, it's the Boneyard, it's the air operations facility, it's drone operations. It's all the kinds of things that Davis-Monthan, from a geographic standpoint and from the standpoint of having millions of dollars already invested in these kinds of missions, is pre-positioned to demonstrate if we get into another base closure discussion that we're not going to get bracked because we have these missions. As far as the F-35 itself is concerned, it is indisputable that the thing is an immense financial drain on the DOD. It has seen cost overruns to the hundreds of millions of dollars. It is still behind schedule. They are still having design flaw issues, and that the manufacturers are still trying to figure out how to start churning these things out in a way that's both safe for the operators and, by extension, safe for people on the ground. I have concerns about it from a fiscal standpoint. I have concerns about it from a safety standpoint. And if they want to demonstrate that it's appropriate to be flying over residential areas and the university because the university is in its flight path, then they might start bringing a few here on a test basis and letting the population know and see and feel what it here is like. I hear from residents all the time that they're concerned about quality of life issues when they're based here. But right now we're not at the top of the pecking order, and that's why my priority or preference would be in any discussions about DM and BRAC, the base realignment and closure discussions about DM, is that we not focus on the F-35, but we focus on the assets and the missions that we have here that are successful, and we can really tie our hat to and say this is the reason DM should stay.
Do you like this idea of arena football coming to the TCC?
If you have ever been to an arena football game, it is a real media overload, sensory overload experience. It's going to be fun. They will play 7 home games. as a tenant in the TCC. It will not overlap and impact the roadrunners, and so we won't have any kind of conflict there. Thankfully, Rio Nuevo is putting about $400,000 into things like the padding and the netting and the turf and the uniforms and all of that. It's curious to me, though, that the guy who is managing the Arizona Rattlers up in Phoenix is one of the owners of the Tucson franchise, and they play in the same league. So kind of an odd sort of maybe conflict going on if we play and when we play head-to-head with the Phoenix franchise. But, yeah, it'll be fun, and it'll start next March and April. And, you know, if you haven't seen one, people ought to at least go out and just check it out, because it's not at all like going to a U of A football game in the open air with, you know, 40 or 50,000 people around you. It's indoors, it's loud, it's fast, and there are a lot of points scored.
Well, we're really filling up the occupancy of the TCC, which is good news.
Yeah, so the Roadrunners are going to enter their third season in September. They start. They have been successful, and I will concede I was a little surprised. Am a little surprised that their fan base is north of 3,000, which is really good. It's better than what they thought, and they've hired a new COO who's going to hopefully do a more robust job of marketing them. Glenn Grabsky is running the TCC and is in close contact with city folks, a guy named Greg Jackson also, and working with Rio Nuevo. And yes, they're filling it up with the Roadrunners as being the anchor tenant, and now the Tucson yet-to-be-named arena team is a second anchor. And the Gem Show, of course, is coming right around the turn of the calendar. And so, yeah, a lot of good things happen down there.
All right, Steve Kasacek, thank you very much. I hope you have a great day. Thanks.
You too, Bill. Thanks,
thanks
a bunch.
A lot.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Thursday edition coming up tomorrow, Friday edition, Friday Focus interview. Pima County Administrator Chuck Huckleberry, very serendipitous to have him on because there's all this talk about this week's news about the Stone Garden grant that was rejected by the board. So there'll be a lot to talk about with Mr. Huckleberry tomorrow. This portion of the program presented by our fine sponsor, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete listing of the great places to stay, and then all these recreation opportunities are listed on the website. I like the Gila National Wilderness. I like the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument north of Silver City. So on and on. Lots to do. southwestnewmexico.org. Let's welcome our contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks. Dr. Hendricks is the Associate Professor Emeritus at the University of Arizona College of Education. He's the former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District and was named one year as Arizona's top school superintendent. Dr. Hendricks, how are you, sir?
Hello, Bill.
Good to talk with you again.
How are you today?
I'm doing well, recovering from vacation, if there is such a thing as recovering. No, we had a great trip in Alaska. I know you've been up there as well, haven't you?
I have, and it's just a beautiful country. It's just the wilderness is just a sight to behold.
It really is. The driving distances up there, my gosh, we put,
yes.
I was in the car, I think one day we put it like, we were in the car for 10 hours and drove
right.
Like,
you were,
yeah.
Did you avoid the mosquito season?
No, we didn't, unfortunately. It's funny you bring that up. Some of them, at some locations, it was bad. You had to just like run, jump back in the car. These were huge mosquitoes up there.
Yeah, I think they say some of them are large enough they could carry you away. Certainly a small dog.
No, it's that is a little bit of a problem. I don't know if I could handle the summers up there with the skeeters. You know, we hear a lot about fake news, and there certainly is a lot of it on the internet. Or some of these, in some cases, there are articles that have, you know, they say that the content is sponsored content. And I wonder about the kids in school, if they understand when they're looking at this content, what the source is.
They actually don't. Many of them don't. And, you know, we talk today about today's generation of kids being very web savvy, and they are, but that doesn't mean that they're media savvy. There's a big difference. And there have been a number of recent studies that have looked at particularly the teen population and how they respond to social media and where they're getting their information, what they're doing with that information. And there was a very comprehensive national study by an organization called Common Sense Media that said that 44% of teens indicated they could tell the difference between fake news stories and real news stories, which is an interesting statistic, but it's followed with a second statistic that says 30% admitted that they shared a news story online, which they found out later was wrong or inaccurate.
Oh, boy.
And that sort of perpetuates this whole cycle of news getting out there, because quite honestly, today anybody can publish anything on the web. We all know that. The researchers at Stanford University found that students are really easily fooled. They found that students oftentimes did not consider who wrote the article. And as you said, oftentimes they ignore the fact that in fine print that this website is sponsored. And they seem to ignore this. And sponsor content is really information that can be really suspect. So the other thing that Stanford found in their study is that the more slick and polished the website looked, the more likely that students would find it credible. Hmm. And then there's a third study, Bill, on Northwestern University that found students put high reliance on information that was listed on Google. And Google apparently prioritizes how things appear on your site depending on how many hits a particular article gets. So oftentimes we trust the information on the engine returns based on the Google ranking, and it's very clear that that shouldn't be the case. Not that it isn't reliable, but there's no guarantee that it's reliable. And so educators are really starting to look and including in their curricula experiences that students should have in looking at what is real and what is fake. And I think there's some lessons to be learned for adults, too, in this particular article. And that is you should look for such indicators as, are the words in all caps? Or are there bold claims that aren't sourced claims? And are there sensationalist headlines or images? And we're encouraging students to check multiple sources before trusting, you know, what they see. And also looking at often legitimate articles will have an about section, which will talk about who the author is and the background of that author. And, you know, the old adage of it's too good to be true, double check elsewhere. I had I have a niece here in California where we're visiting that was very upset last week about something that she had read on Twitter about In-N-Out Burger.
Huh.
The fact that the Republican Party had donated $25,000 to In-N-Out, and immediately the Twitter information was, well, let's boycott In-N-Out Burger.
Hmm.
The problem is, if you read the rest of the article and verified it, In-N-Out Burger gave $25,000 to the Republican Party and also $25,000 to the Democratic Party.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, a simple case of, you know, information going out online that started a social movement that was totally inaccurate and very, very unfair. And I think this probably happens more than we think. But one thing is, as an academic, I would caution teens, but I would caution adults as well, be cautious of, is Wikipedia.
Hmm.
In the academic arena, you cannot, if you're writing a paper, you cannot quote Wikipedia.
Huh.
And the reason is because Wikipedia is an open source. Anyone can contribute information to Wikipedia, and it's not verifiable. And so, you know, I use it. I'm sure everybody does it, you know, for a kind of a quick search mm-hmm. and get background mm-hmm. information. But if you're going to use it as a reliable source, you better double check the information because, again, as an open source, you, I, or anybody who wants to can add information to that particular topic in Wikipedia, and it's not challenged, it's not contested, it's not academically tested, and it could be accurate or it might not be accurate. And as I said, there's no oversight, and so college students know, they learn very early as freshmen, that if you're going to write a paper, you cannot use Wikipedia as a source.
Wow.
Because there's no assurance that it's accurate information.
All right. Dr. Robert Hendricks, we're going to have to wrap it up. And one more warning, be careful about what you do click on, often known as clickbait. You got to be very careful on some of these articles. Be very cautious before you even click on it, correct?
You do. It's a trap waiting to catch you.
It
so be careful of that.
All right.
So good talking with you. Interesting topic.
Thank you, Bob. Always a pleasure.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Always a pleasure to welcome Attorney Don Luce to the program. We welcome Mr. Luce the first Thursday of the month. Mr. Luce is with, and he is the principal in Luce Law, whose offices are in Tucson and the Phoenix area. Don Luce, our legal contributor, is the author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, in its second printing, and the Estate Planning in Arizona book, What You Need to Know. Don, first of all, good to see you.
Good to see you, Bill.
And the Estate Planning book, has that gone to the printer or just about imminently will?
Imminently, and it will be out by the end of the year.
There's so much to talk about, and that's for another show about estate planning, but something that most people put on the back burner and shouldn't. Arizona Supreme Court blocking a ballot measure. This is a big deal. And as the New York Times points out, by this not going on the ballot, Arizona schools potentially could miss out on almost $700 million.
That's annually, $700
yes.
million
Huge.
Annually. So just by way of context for this discussion, every general election, Arizona voters and the Arizona legislature, to some extent, put ballot measures up for vote. That's how the Arizona Medical Marijuana Act was enacted. It was a voter initiative, and it received a majority of the votes, and it became a law.
It's in our Constitution.
Yes.
This initiative process.
And so when we're talking about ballot initiatives, we're talking about things that are going to be on the ballot if the petitions contain enough signatures. And in order to get a ballot initiative up, you need about 250,000 signatures, a little bit less, but about 250,000. And if some of the signatures are challenged and prove not to be valid, then they will be subtracted from the total. And if you don't meet the minimum number, your ballot initiative does not go on to the ballot. There's another way that ballot initiatives are kept off the ballot, and that is what we're talking about here with this invest in education measure. They had enough signatures. They had about 270,000 signatures.
What about the language?
Problematic, because the Arizona Supreme Court found that the wording of the proposition could have confused voters about the extent of the proposed tax increase. What this initiative was about was an increase in state income taxes on the wealthiest. The income taxes would be raised by 3 to 4 percentage points on individuals and households earning more than $250,000. The court found that the initiative was confusing because it didn't address the issue of annual adjustments for inflation. And so the court said you can't put it on the ballot. Well, they had 270,000 signatures, about 50,000 more than what was required. But because of the wording of the proposition, it's not going to be on the November ballot. Now, there will be a lot of other propositions on the November ballot, but this will not be one of them. And as you pointed out, if this measure had passed, it would have raised about $700 million a year in taxes that would be used for education.
Was there a problem with the word percent or percentage? I have heard that was one of the issues.
I think the—
Does that go back to that whole thing about the— it's a little confusing about the language, but go ahead.
No, I think it goes to the overall understanding of what the proposition was really about. And I think the court had a problem with the fact that it wasn't specific enough in terms of what the effect would be with respect to the tax increase. And because of that confusion, it ruled that the ballot measure is not going to be something that Arizona voters will be dealing with in November.
And it's the signatures that get these things tossed off. So this is a bit unusual about language.
You know, but what I'm seeing, Bill, is there are more challenges now to the text of the proposals because if you're well-funded enough, you can get 225,000 signatures.
Right.
So then that leaves, as a practical matter, primarily only one challenge, and that is the text of the proposed measure. In this case, they argued that it was confusing. In some other cases, I've seen arguments made that The text actually deals with two separate subjects and therefore should be two separate propositions instead of one. So that seems to be a more common challenge that we're seeing to these voter initiatives.
Ingrid has a question for us about propositions. Hi, Ingrid.
Hi. Actually, it's two things. The percent and the percentage. If sales tax is 7%, you want to make it 8%, you're going to raise it to one more percent, to 8. Percentage-wise, that's more than 1%. Mm-hmm. Getting to the who's being taxed to begin with, I don't think it sounds constitutional. How can you single out a group of people and say you're going to be taxed more? Why isn't everybody getting an income tax increase?
Okay, let's see if Don has any wants to contribute at all to that.
Okay, so if you're changing the law through a voter initiative to tax a certain segment of the society, in this case, the top wage earners in Arizona, to generate additional funds for education, I'm not sure that that's going to be struck down because it targets a particular class of people. If you look generally at the tax structure, the wealthiest Americans, for instance, pay more than people in the middle class. And so I think that precedent would probably carry over to this particular measure, which admittedly does discriminate against taxpayers based on the amount of their income. But I don't think that is unconstitutional, at least in my opinion.
Now, this other initiative that has been highly publicized, the so-called dark money ballot initiative, this now was disqualified because of fewer valid signatures necessary.
Right. So in this case, the proponents of the ballot initiative had fewer than the 225,000 signatures that were necessary to qualify for the ballot. They took this to court, and the Arizona Supreme Court, by the way, said that there were an insufficient number of signatures to put this measure on the ballot. But the thing that they wanted to do was to claw back some of the signatures that had been disqualified because the gatherers had not complied with the statute and how you obtain signatures on these petitions when you're circulating them to get the ballot put on for the general election. So this dark money initiative, as it's been called, would have essentially overruled the existing law that shields donors who give to organizations which seek to affect state and legislative elections. Under the Internal Revenue Code, there are entities known as social welfare organizations. And if you contribute or donate to a social welfare organization, you can essentially shield your identity as being a donor to a particular cause. That organization will in turn then support the cause or the candidate that you've given money to support, but your name won't be out in the public. This dark money initiative sought to change that, but as we've already said, they didn't gather enough signatures to put it on the ballot. They were about 2,000 short at the very least. They could have been more than that, but they were at least 2,000 short.
There will be an initiative. I don't know how many are going to be on the ballot. Maybe you know, Don. But
I do not.
I don't know. But one that will be on allows, it's an energy measure. Can you kind of give us the bottom line real quickly on that one, please?
Yes. It's Proposition 127. This initiative would require that by the year 2030, at least 50% of the energy produced in Arizona come from renewable sources. Now, there's already a requirement promulgated by the Arizona Corporation Commission that by the year 2025, at least 15% of the energy produced be from renewable sources. This initiative, if it passes, and it will be on the ballot, would increase that from 15% to 50%.
Wow.
In a five-year period.
That's huge.
Now, there's an interesting loophole, I think, and that is a legislative proposal that was signed by Governor Ducey into law this past August, which puts the fine for not complying with the renewable energy standard at no more than $5,000. Mm. So the skeptics are saying that even if this proposition passes, it may be less expensive for companies like APS to not comply with the standard and pay the fine than to comply with it. But anyway, that's the argument.
They may say that's just chump change. All right, Don Luce, we will look for your revised edition of the book, Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. That's so important, the estate planning.
Well, so estate planning isn't just about wealth preservation. It's also about things like who's going to make healthcare decisions for you if you're not able to make them for yourself, or who's going to take care of your financial matters if you're incapable of doing so. So when you're talking about estate planning, you're actually discussing things that affect you currently, potentially affect you in the future, and then, of course, provide for the disposition of your assets after your death.
Don Luce of Luce Law, whose offices are in Tucson and Phoenix. What's your website, Don Luce?
www.lucelawgroup.com.
Thank you very much, Don.
Thanks,
Always
Bill.
It's a pleasure. Coming up tomorrow morning, Wake Up Tucson, 6 to 9. I'll be here at 12:04 with Chuck Huckleberry, Pima County Administrator. Joining me, Sarah Garrett-Gasson, who oversees editorial page content for the Arizona Daily Star. On behalf of Don Luce and Ray Allen, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon.